Good evening and a warm welcome to each of you. We are genuinely excited that you've decided to join us tonight to share in creating the valuable exploration of cellular wisdom. I am Doug Strachan, founder and director of Memory Powers, LLC, sharpening your mind, improving memory across your lifespan with the science, art, and power of mnemonics. I am truly honored and enthused to host this series with Dr. Joan King, eminent neuroscientist, professor emeritus at the Tufts University Medical School, a certified professional life and business coach, and the author of the breakthrough 2004 book entitled Cellular Wisdom, Decoding the Body's Secret Language. Now, before Dr. King joins us on the call from her Colorado mountain home, let me say we welcome your questions and comments as we intend that this amazing journey together with you will serve each of you in your delicious uniqueness. So kindly follow this path to send in your burning question both during and after the call tonight. In fact, we'll be monitoring this site throughout the month of April. First, visit Dr. King's Beyond Success website at www.beyond-success.com. That's www.beyond-success.com. Next, click on the Teleseminars menu option at the upper right of the homepage. Then, click on the gold-colored Cellular Wisdom link, and the next page, as you scroll through the information about the series, will present you with a hot link near the bottom of that page labeled, "To submit your questions, click here." Now, after submitting your most important questions about how cellular wisdom can guide us to a life of exuberance and fulfillment, please use your back button to return to Beyond Success, or if you prefer, you can use the Continue button to view the Memory Powers website at your leisure. Now, likewise, we plan to keep the telephone lines open for you, and we'll have a live interaction. Let me first introduce Dr. Joan King and have her welcome you to the Cellular Wisdom Series in her own inimitable way. Good evening, Dr. King.
Good evening, Doug, and good evening, everybody. I really am so excited about us getting down to the techniques and measures and ways to tap into that interior source of inexhaustible energy. And so I've titled tonight's talk, with your questions, of course, Understanding Cellular Wisdom. Last time, if you heard any of the preview calls, I have defined cellular wisdom, but let me do it for you to bring it into the freshness of our awareness. There is within each of us an energy that has an ancient memory because it is the same exact energy that was involved in the slow evolution of molecules that eventually became encased in membranes. And it, over a billion years, learned how to assemble the components of a cell, a single cell, that performed all the functions of nutrition, waste, reproduction, avoiding pain, everything. However, such a cell is limited, therefore, in how much any energy it can put into any one of these activities because it always has to be monitoring all of them. And so over the next billion years, cells began to aggregate and to specialize. So some became muscle cells or bone cells, but what it meant was that when they specialized, if they didn't cooperate, the whole organism would disintegrate because the organism now, the assembly of all the cells, had to be able to do everything. And so there was the development of a digestive system and an endocrine system and a muscular system and a skeletal system. And so what marks all of these is specialization or differentiation, meaning turn into specialized cells, cooperation, and integration. But what guides the life of each of those cells in spite of the fact that they've become different, is that each of them is alive for one and only one reason. And that reason is because life force pulses into it moment by moment to give the gift of life. And that life force, that energy, is ancient, has all the experience of what I've described in the evolution of the single cell, of multiple cells, of organ systems, of organisms. Now, you might say to me, Joan, I can't close my eyes and retrieve all that information. And my first response to you is, actually, you can, but you can't in the way that you're assuming that you can. What I mean by that is we have become very clearly organisms who pay attention to analytical and synthetic understandings, verbal language understandings. And when I use the word understand cellular wisdom, I'm using it in a completely different context because, frankly, our minds cannot get around something that is so enormously big. The way to understand cellular wisdom is to experience it. And what we're going to talk about tonight are several steps and exercises that you can begin to do to touch and experience cellular wisdom.
Yes, Dr. King, you're describing an intelligence which is incredible and nearly beyond comprehension. And as we're understanding this ancient and inherent wisdom, what would be the first step, do you think? How do we begin to experience this as you're describing?
Well, the first thing to understand is that cellular wisdom does not shout, does not scream, and does not jump up and down to get your attention, which means it's subtle. It's quiet. In other words, there must be a stillness that you engage in to invite the whisperings of this ancient song. Universe meaning one song. There is one song that is sung, and it is the song of life. However, when we are active, especially mentally, because we can touch stillness when we're active physically if our mind is quiet, but it's very difficult to touch stillness if our minds are running around in circles. So step number one is quiet the mind. Now, I want to talk about that a little bit. And in fact, before I do, I might ask you, what do you do to quiet your mind? And anyone on the call can answer.
Joan, this is Pamela. One of the things that I have done is John Kabat-Zinn's work and done his meditation work, and that's one way that I've sort of slowed down the mind and slowed down the thinking. Mm-hmm. The second thing that I've done is incorporated on a daily basis just sitting still for 15 minutes mm-hmm. and just being still, not doing anything, not moving, just quieting myself, and then I'll journal after that, which has been really remarkable as far as the input that I've come up with.
Great. And have you found, Pamela, that this process that you've begun to engage in allows you to access regions of your being that you're not familiar with on a daily basis in other circumstances?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I feel like it will give me input and wisdom that I don't necessarily want to connect to. But it's a good thing that I am.
Yes.
So, yes, absolutely.
Anyone else?
Hi, Kathleen Caldwell.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I'm on a headset, so I hope the connection is okay.
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Great, thank you. What I like to do is utilize Wayne Dyer's Japa Meditation CD, or Nathaniel Brandon has an excellent tape for meditation. And so I can use their CDs to actually quiet my mind and get into a space of nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like the Pamela was saying before, it's through meditation, relaxation, and I also notice when I jog, when I run, I can get into that state very easily.
Kathleen, this is Pamela again. I actually just experimented with Wayne Dyer's Japa meditation, and I also found that it was amazing in that you didn't think about anything else but what you were actually doing in his time.
So it's this beautiful space, which is really very serene, and just it's like nothing and everything at the same time.
And that is the essence of what we're after. Anybody else have another technique they want to share with us?
Hello, this is Margaret.
Hi, Margaret.
Breathing, just paying attention to my breath, and even if it's just for a few seconds, I just noticed that I have a feeling or a sense of a quietness that affects my my being and whatever I am doing.
Yes. The reason I asked those of you who wanted to share is because there is many different ways of stilling our mind and stepping into another dimension, as there are beings in the universe. So there isn't, I think one of the problems that people get into is I must do A before B happens. I must learn this meditation technique before I can engage in meditation. And I think that those kinds of thoughts allow us to keep putting off doing things. I must learn how to do this before I can do that. So the first thing that I would encourage you to do, if you're going to engage in this month of exploration, is I'm going to ask each of you to deepen the process whereby you touch spirit. And if that means a longer time, or if it means meditating more often, or if it means being in a different environment so that you can resonate with the stillness around you. I can tell you that living in the mountains in Colorado compared to downtown Boston is the difference between hearing the song of the universe and hearing all the noise that was layered on top of the sound of the universe. Now, this is not a condemnation. I'm not saying don't live in cities. Don't misinterpret me, because underneath that noise is the same song. It's sung everywhere. It's that at certain times, it is easier for us to use certain environments. And so for our first exercise in quieting your mind over this week until next week, I'd like you to think about the optimum places that you meditate and take it to the next level. And I can tell you by formulating that intention, the process begins to work. It begins to work because you're articulating a way of wanting to connect with spirit. And it's as though the entire universe is an expression of spirit. In fact, it is through our eyes that the universe sees itself. And it's through our hearts that the universe loves itself. We are part of, and we are at the same time witness to. And as we engage in these two roles of resonating with and witnessing, our level of awareness begins to shift, and we begin to look at things from a deeper level. I really love Albert Einstein's comment that we never solve problems at the same level of thinking that created them. I often repeat that phrase because many of us, when faced with a challenge or an issue, try to, quote, figure it out. When we're never going to, quote, figure it out. It has to come from a different level of existence to embrace the solution, which is so much bigger than the problem. It's embedded in the problem. The solution is always embedded in the problem. But how do we get to it? We get to it by going deeper, by going bigger, and by quieting our minds. So our first assignment for this week is to bring our level. If you don't meditate at all, begin to meditate just 5 minutes a day. If you already engage in meditation intermittently, then commit to meditating every single day. If you meditate every day, then you may want to commit to deepen your level of connection. And the reason why I'm suggesting all of these is that if you knew that in this time of meditation, you would be nourished beyond your wildest expectations. You would be able to tap into the deep wisdom and the deep love of the universe. In other words, it is like going into a space where everything can be rebuilt, rejuvenated, where we can shed what we no longer need, what no longer serves us. And so learning to go to that place is step one. Doug, do you want to say anything about meditation and your use of it?
Yes, Joan, thank you. I have coined a term, meditarinate, where I'm actually immersed in the pleasure of my hot tub while I'm meditating and feeling a more fluid connection with that which is around me. Now, another question, Joan. You have advanced very convincingly a case that cellular wisdom exists deep within every one of us.
Right.
Now, what might one do if one doesn't initially feel a contact or a connection with that inherent universal wisdom? Can you give us some idea of how we might proceed if we don't notice it right at first when we begin to connect?
Right. So I'm going to use the analogy of a child learning to speak. And we all know the process. First of all, there are sounds. And then there are single words. And then there are simple sentences. And only then are there more complex sentences, and then later true concepts. So we don't say, does a child have language or not? It's the level of language that the child has facility with. Meditation is the fastest way that we have to connect with cellular wisdom. And in the beginning, it may not feel like anything is different. So imagine a swimmer going to the ocean and sticking their big toe in the ocean. Now, could they say they're swimming? No, but they've taken the first step, because until they start to put a part of the body in the water, they can't get to swimming. And then it'll come that maybe they'll wade, and maybe they'll float, and finally they'll dive. Meditation is the same way. We begin with what might feel like, am I doing this right? How do I know if I'm doing this right? Maybe I'm not doing this right. And many of us engaged in that. And the thing is, there is no only way, which is why I asked everyone to just talk about what they did. And you heard many different ways, and there are many more different ways. There are some people who meditate best when they dance. Others meditate best when they paint. I know a composer who meditates best when he's composing because the melody, literally he hears it. And he's connected to another level of energy. So yes, in the beginning, it's unlikely you will feel the contact. However, just like what motivates a person to learn to swim is maybe they want to go swimming with their friends. Or maybe someone's invited them for a wonderful weekend on the boat and they want to be able to swim. Or maybe, as it happened for me, we went on a cruise and I wanted to go snorkeling and see the beautiful fishes in the ocean. So there has to be a reason why you would go through the process, because any process unfolds like a rose opens and takes time. So it might be helpful if you thought about what is the motivating reason that would keep you on the track of meditating. In fact, let me ask some of you who meditate regularly, what is it that keeps you meditating? Anyone can answer.
Joan, this is Pamela. I actually kind of have a question at the same time I'm responding to what you said.
That's fine.
What do you think about having sort of several tools in your toolbox? Or do you think it's more beneficial to utilize one form of meditation? Because sometimes I find, having been exposed to a few different ways, that depending on the day and my ability to settle myself, one form might seem a little more attractive to me than another on that particular day. And I guess my question is, do you think, you know, that staying with one will be more beneficial in the long run?
No, I don't. Actually, life is very dynamic. I mean, some days you get up and you want to dress in red because you feel vibrant. And other days you're very calm and you want to be surrounded by blue. Our bodies show us that we're constantly replacing the cells that need to be replaced, but we aren't constantly replacing neurons, which are with us for entire lives. So I believe that the best way that you can follow is to follow your intuition just as you described it. Some days, one form or another. I've gotten to the point now where I've abandoned form. And so when I meditate, I just sit quietly and let whatever is going to happen, happen. Sometimes there's a bright light that I walk into, and as soon as I step into that sphere of light, it expands to fill everything in my visual world. Other times it's a very quiet thing. Other times it's a very peaceful, simply settling back and almost like saying, ah, this is a time I don't have to do anything except be. And so I think that as you come to espouse a methodology that works for you or several that work for you at different times, the best thing to remember is there are no rules. The only thing that's important is to produce the end result, which is connectedness with spirit, quietness, and sereneness, so that it's as though you're preparing a quiet studio and to be able to hear the whispering voice that will emerge. Does that answer you, Pamela?
Yes, and I think, and you know, what I was thinking when you asked the question is, I was thinking about variety, but I do feel like I've gravitated more towards just the sitting quietly for the 15 minutes. It's like I don't really have to think about what type of meditation it is, and I can just sit quietly.
So what motivates you, Pamela, or anyone else to keep doing it?
Well, I guess what I'd say where I am in the process now is just having that knowledge, then I know I'm going to connect with my inner wisdom.
Right.
So it's almost, I guess that's the motivator to keep me disciplined. And, mm-hmm. I have days when I'm like, I'll want to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do anything else but sit still for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that knowing that if I really want to connect, then I need to sit and be still.
Right. Right.
Well, I would say that the primary motivators are, it is very uplifting and very energizing and actually brings me closer to the totality.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me to exist in the totality, which is actually a very pleasant sensation.
Mm-hmm. And that leads directly into what I was going to suggest that we move into right now, because what we have been describing is a mental state. And meditation is not only a mental state, it's a feeling state. It's a state of releasing worry, releasing pain. It's a state of beginning to pay attention to your body in the sense of, I'm not meaning like the position of your toe or your ankle, I'm meaning the intuitive kinds of feelings that many of us have in particular parts of our bodies. Often the expression is used, I have a knot in my stomach. I have a pain in my neck. When we quiet the mental world and we begin to go into the feeling world, there is a wealth of information there for us. What's interesting about the information, however, is most of the information is not verbal. It's what I would call pre-verbal. It's in that state of feeling. And you might say, well, why is it so important for me to get in touch with my pre-verbal energy? And I would say that of the way that we approach the world, the language verbal world probably can only approach about 10% of reality. The other 90% is represented in images, in sounds, in textures, in colors, but not in words. And as we begin to open up to this enormous vista of information, both within us and around us, but particularly within us, because our bodies respond to that kind of surround in specific ways, you know when your body is totally relaxed. You know when you might try to totally relax your body, but some parts of your body will not be relaxed. You know when there is a misgiving. I think Pamela said earlier, there sometimes you don't want to hear what you're going to hear in meditation, in that subtle whispering that's pre-verbal, because your body is uncomfortable. And I think that we have to face the discomfort pre-verbally and allow yourself to face it so that you can clarify it and take action so that it doesn't become an actual challenge. How many times have you heard people say, you know, I knew this was going to be a problem. I just knew it. I don't know how I knew it. I just knew this was going to be a problem. Most of us, however, don't act on that information because it doesn't show up in a logical trajectory that we can explain to somebody else. And if it doesn't, our mental filter says, then it can't have any validity. So one of the things I'm going to ask you to do this week is while you are in meditation, and then after you're in meditation, which is at a time that your body is most relaxed, to really pay attention to what you're feeling. And as I said before, I don't mean physically the position of your legs or whatever. I mean the feelings that you're feeling, that Maybe it's just a discomfort in your chest. Experience what that discomfort in your chest feels like so that you can recognize it at another time when a lot of activity is going on. Recognize if there is, if you start to think about one thing and there is a sense of deep joy when that particular thing comes up, then make yourself aware of that feeling so you can recognize it more instantly in a normal environment. Okay, so this is our step two in the process, because we started this line of discussion with what do you do if you don't feel a contact? Well, you begin the process like you begin to stick your big toe in the ocean as the first step to learning to swim. And we quieted our minds, but now paying attention to what we feel and where we feel it, so that we can recognize it in other circumstances when we aren't so quiet and start to realize that there are messages embedded here that can help guide us to a more exuberant life. Do any of you have examples of this kind of thing happening to you?
Well, Joan, it's Kathleen. Mm-hmm. When I am, I'm a coach, and when I am working with a client over the phone or in person, and the moment that I know that I've been listening and right in the zone of asking really good questions,
mm-hmm.
and they, I can feel them stretching,
mm-hmm.
and then they get it,
mm-hmm.
and they have an insight, and there's just this magic that happens on the with them.
Right.
That's the time for me.
Yes. And what does it feel like, Kathleen?
Oh, it is, my heart is pounding. I have this beautiful blend of happiness and excitement and joy, and I'm feeling really satisfied and proud and thrilled, mm-hmm. and just so deeply grateful.
Yes. Yes. Anybody else have this experience? An experience of feeling something in your body that is an indication of guiding you in a certain direction or toward a certain decision. Well, if nobody does, I'm going to take this opportunity. Doug said that there was a question that was submitted. And Doug, do you want to tell me? I think that question might fit right here. About why is it I do what I do?
Yes, there was a submission on the Ask database, and we might just take a moment to help people reach that site. If you have a thought or a question after the call is complete, please drill down from the home page at www.beyond-success.com to the teleseminars page, and then select Cellular Wisdom. And on that page, if you'll scroll down, there's a hot link for submit your questions here. We do have one, and this is the verbatim entry, Dr. King. On April 2nd, we had this question. Just why do you do what you do?
And I think it fits appropriately, because when I left a life that had a lot of rules and regulations and restrictions, because it was within an organization that was historically created in such a fashion, I felt this immense sense of liberation. And in feeling that sense of liberation, I began to construct my coaching business and writing, and realized that I don't know the statistics as of today, but it's often been reported that a very small percentage of people are happy doing their jobs. Very small. And I thought, you know, if people could experience what I'm feeling and doing the work that I've created, and if I could be a part of helping them unfold that, I can't imagine a more fulfilling and enjoying and joyful life, lifestyle, way to live. I often hang up the phone from a client or close the door after they left and just kind of scream, yes, because you can feel that they're starting to claim essential parts of themselves they've ignored for long periods of time. And a lot of my coaching is about starting to listen to this deeper part of yourself, because I am convinced that every single person that ever lived or ever will live has the capacity, has the wisdom within and the capacity to reach it, should they provide the conditions to allow it to happen. Now, it is not going to intrude into the noise and send out fireworks. It doesn't operate that way. And that's why I've made such a important case in this first teleseminar for the being quiet and the beginning to feel what's going on in your body. It is the very foundation of everything that we're going to do in the next 3 weeks. And so it might seem that we're doing very little, because it requires you to go to a deepening place. And it requires you to look at a different set of values. You know, many people can't take the time to meditate because their thought is, but I'm not productive when I meditate. I'm not working when I meditate. The fact is that you will be able to work much more creatively and productively when you're experiencing that internal resonance of all parts of yourself intertwined, integrated, working together in a peacefulness and deep joy.
Yes, so, Dr. King?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. The intriguing concepts in Cellular Wisdom, the book, include that on the neuronal cellular level, is that there's a need. In fact, it's built into the design that there's a resting state.
That's right.
Is that a parallel that sheds light on what you're suggesting, as we get quiet, we actually rejuvenate to respond again at the appropriate time? Can you address some of the cellular science of this concept?
Sure. When a neuron actually stimulates activity, the way that it happens is either it's in contact with the sensory world and some stimulant stimulates the neuronal membrane, or the neuron has been stimulated by another neuron. But the first thing that happens is all of the molecules usually have their places, potassium in one compartment and chloride in another compartment. And when an electrical impulse starts to be conducted, the way that it's conducted down the neuronal membrane is that sodium chloride and sodium other ions rush in and potassium rushes out. And there's this total exchange, so everybody switches places. So it will take fractions of a millisecond for a neuron to activate a synapse, that is, conduct an electrical impulse and then release a chemical to the next neuron in the chain to keep the activity moving or to amplify it. Interestingly, however, the neuron spends 2 to 3 times as much time after the impulse has been conducted and the neurochemicals have been secreted, allowing it to re-equilibrate so that the sodium leaves the inside and goes out, the potassium comes from the outside back in, and restores a state of sensitivity. If, in fact, you attempt to activate the neuron during that time, which is called a refractory period, you have to use a lot of electrical energy to do it because the neuron is very insensitive because everything hasn't been re-equilibrated. And if you continue to do it, you will kill the neurons. And I do think, I mean, the sub title on my book, Cellular Wisdom, is Decoding the Body's Secret Language. And it's decoding the language of how cells thrive to teach us how to thrive. And one of the ways the neurons stay exquisitely sensitive is by having this rest period, this refractory period, that in which apparently nothing happens, but what really is happening is all the things that got displaced in the period of activity are coming back to that period of rest. And it can actually be measured in the membrane potential of the neuron. You can watch it return to the state of sensitivity. Now, a lot of us, when we've gone through difficult times, and we've been with nose to the grindstone, meeting deadlines, making presentations, traveling. And then, what do? We come back and try to work twice as hard to catch up on all the other stuff that piled up while that was going on. That is not what the neurons model for us to do. They would model for us to take a, quote, time out and turn off. And in fact, I don't know if you notice this, but when there are times in your life when you do that, you've had a deadline or something, you're exhausted reaching it, now you don't let yourself rest, you want to catch up on everything that was put aside, how many mistakes do you make? And how much time do you do doing things two and three times? And it's because you've lost the sensitivity to do it. And you've lost the ability to really engage your own cellular wisdom to do it more effortlessly. It doesn't have to be a struggle. The song of the universe is not a song of struggle. It is a song of liberation and freedom and expansiveness.
Joan, this is Wanda in Pensacola. I came to the call late, but hi there.
Hey, Wanda.
Hey, I wanted to tell you something very interesting going on in Pensacola of what you're talking about, and it would be all the surrounding areas related to the hurricane.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that people are talking about here is that lack of sensitivity that you're talking about. Right after the hurricane, everybody went off of work time, because everything came to a standstill.
Right.
And then, and I won't go through the whole process, but there's a process they're going through that's very artificial,
mm-hmm.
But very apropos to the situation itself. And now people are finally beginning to relax.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fear again because June 1, everybody well knows, is hurricane season begins again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting what's going on around here because there's been no rest.
Mm-hmm.
There's just been no rest. People are still putting their houses back together and all kinds of things. And it's interesting watching psychologically what's going on the road with road rage and just all kinds of things that's going on around here. And I don't really guess I have a question other than it only relates to that prolonged sense of not spending time.
Right. Exactly. And you know, it doesn't take a lot of time. You know, the neuron spends 2 to 3 times as much time in rest as it does in activity. And that's ideal. But even the smallest amount of time that we can spend in that place of quietude will begin to move us into a state where we can do more, where we can feel more, and where our work will come from our depth and not just the periphery of getting it done.
So why do we forget that? I mean, why do we have to be reminded?
Well, I was telling somebody today that in one of the spiritual books by Emmanuel, he's asked, why is it that we forget the magnificence of who we are? And I just love the answer, which is for the joy of rediscovering it. And I think that we're in the process, and it's my intention that through these weeks, we rediscover our magnificence. When you can resonate with that level of energy, it begins to change everything. Priorities change. The way you go about doing work changes. I know that I find myself now, when I have tons of work to do, that the first thing I do in meditation in the morning is say, I know I'll know the most important things that have to get done today. And I can't tell you what a relief it is to get away from the other approach I used to have, which was, if I work 30 hours a day, I'll never get all I have to do done. Which is a very debilitating and exhausting perspective. Because you're tired before you start, because it looks like you're going to crash into a cement wall. Whereas, when you're confident that you'll know, and that you'll let your wisdom direct you to the most important things that have to be done today, there is a completely different emanation of that energy that you bathe in. And I find when I do that, answers to things I hadn't even asked about just pop up. It didn't take any time.
Well, Joan, as we're nearing the end of our first cellular wisdom call, understanding cellular wisdom, let's give our callers just one more chance to continue to submit their input and their questions at that site, the Ask Database. If you just locate the beyond-success.com homepage, navigate to teleseminars, navigate through cellular wisdom, and then hit the hot link to submit your questions. We will be monitoring that throughout the month of April. And I certainly feel I have a much deeper understanding of cellular wisdom. I would reflect that having read this intriguing and substantial book of yours, there you draw a lot of parallels from the cell science to how it might apply in our daily living, in our relationships, and in our business. So just a teaser that next week we'll be talking about the topic of tapping in to cellular wisdom. Certainly we have engaged that subject already tonight. We do have just about 7 or 8 minutes. I'd like to end timely to respect the time that our callers have budgeted. And so, Dr. King, open the lines, if you will, for additional questions or closing comments.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear if there are some things that you'd like me to address in this first call.
I'm hearing, if I could summarize, that there are essentially two steps that you've talked about today. One is first to quiet the mind.
And yes.
By whatever means is most uniquely useful for each individual. Secondly, you're talking about engaging a state of feeling that is essentially nonverbal or preverbal. And those would seem to be the major summary points from the discussion, at least in terms of practical exercises.
Yes, and each of them has a specific purpose. The quieting of the mind is so you can listen as we progress in this to the subtle whisperings of the deeper preverbal knowing. And the feeling is to begin to be sensitive and aware of those feelings so that you can pay attention to them in circumstances other than when you're just sitting quietly. Because oftentimes you will find after something has progressed to a certain level and it all of a sudden breaks through and you recognize it, you recognize you have had those feelings all along. You just didn't know what they were. So you want to start to learn what they are. When are you joyous? Absolutely out of your mind, wild, joyous. When are you feeling so restricted? And in fact, you might want to listen to the download of the first preview call where I gave some exercises for how you can test two decisions that may be in your future by tracing a trajectory of first one decision and following how it makes you feel expansive or constricted and then subsequently do the second decision and pay attention to those feelings again. That is, are you feeling constricted or expansive?
And Dr. King, would it be fair to say that this intuitive element, or shall we just call it intuition, is not just a mental process, but it is also connecting with this feeling state, which is very natural and arises from our core outward?
I don't think intuition is intellectual at all. I think it is an emergence of that pre-verbal knowing that doesn't have a verbal context. It's not at the level of consciousness, but it is. I often ask people, what is it you know that you don't know that you know? And I'll repeat that. What is it you know that you don't know that you know? Because there's a lot that we know and aren't aware of. Often it comes out when you're talking to someone else. It's evoked by a certain circumstance. Haven't you had the experience where you tell somebody something and then you say, oh my God, I didn't even know I knew that.
Yeah.
And that is an example of the fact that you had not verbalized it before, but you knew it. And to the degree that you begin to reap that level of communication between the pre-verbal and the verbal, it's like swimming in two worlds, going into the depths and bringing it up. The deepening of the meaning about life begins to emerge. It's like going into the void and coming back out again. In the void, everything is possible. But in the here and now, a certain choice has been made and a certain circumstance prevails. It's like the certain circumstance is the verbal word. The void of all possibilities is the pre-verbal world. And communicating between the two, we are at our greatest wholeness, even though our society doesn't recognize that. Our society places enormous value on the external and very little value on the internal world. But that's not where our deep meaning and satisfaction is going to come.
That may be reflected in the observations of the healing from the hurricane, in fact.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we do just have a couple of minutes left, and perhaps this would be just right, Joan, for you to give us a teaser of the content for tapping into our cellular wisdom when we next meet together a week from tonight.
Well, you know, after you've done the heightened your practices, now, I don't think you're attracted to this kind of information if you aren't already familiar with it, and probably at very deep levels. And I'm only encouraging you to go even deeper, so that by the time that we meet again and speak again, we're going to talk about specific tapping into the cellular wisdom to meet your specific challenges. That is, there are circumstances that might initially have us become very defensive. That certainly isn't tapping into cellular wisdom. How do we go about shifting that perspective, tapping into that cellular wisdom, so that we bring a new pattern of energy around those situations that are the most difficult for us? Now, I'm not going to suggest you start practicing with the most difficult ones. Next week, we'll start practicing with some specific ones. So you may want, during the week, to either submit your question on the database so I can begin to think about it and incorporate it into my comments next week, or bring it up when we're in the actual call. It just gives me more time to think about if you send it along. And we'll have those steps now of using it. Today we're generating the foundation of deepening your experience of it. And now we're going to take it out of the void next week and bring it into those situations that it could be most beneficial to you. Does that sound interesting?
We will look forward eagerly to that, and I do encourage the input once again, and it certainly, as Joan and I have worked together to design the teleseries, it's certainly our shared intent that we address precisely what it is that you're most interested in, loyal callers. So please join us again at 5:30 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time, or in the Eastern time zone, that'll be 7:30, and the Western is 4:30. Thanks again, and let me bid you all a very pleasant good evening, and we will make the audio recordings available to each of you to freely download and continue to digest this veritable feast of uplifting information. Thank you, Dr. King, and thank you, ladies from around the country. Please join us again next week on the 11th of April for Session 2, Tapping In to Cellular Wisdom with Dr. Joan King, author of the book. Thank you.